Hello, and welcome to this latest Phrase of Allender podcast. My name is Emma Congreve, and today I'm delighted to be joined by two people who are on work placements with us here at the Phrase of Allender Institute, and Pat Sukumwenda and Sophie Haldane. And over the course of the work placement, together we've been working on a project looking at the impact of economic policy over the last year, because there have been many changes made in both monetary and fiscal policy over that time. And we put a report out on our website as part of the economic commentary that looked at some of these issues. And today we're just going to discuss them a bit further. Later on, we'll also be joined by Mary Sparage to look ahead to the future. So to start, can I come to you? Sophie, so what have been the main tools used in response to the pandemic?
Yeah, so it might be easier if I split this into monetary and fiscal policy. So beginning with monetary policy, the Bank of England's mainly lowered interest rates and expanded its quantitative easing programme in attempt to try and stimulate the economy. So while lowering interest rates tends to be like quite a standard and typical tool for the bank to use during recessions, quantitative easing is a relatively new policy programme which emerged during the 2008 financial crisis. It's become more common in recent years because interest rates are closer to what we would call their effective lower bound. So this is where they're at their lowest they can be before becoming negative. So when a recession like the one we're currently experiencing hits, more is needed to try and stimulate the economy than just lowering interest rates. So that's where QE comes in. Looking at fiscal policy, on the other hand, perhaps the most notable policy has been the introduction of job retention schemes. So the UK has never used such a scheme before, and it perhaps took inspiration from how Germany used its wage subsidy scheme. So Germany had relatively low levels of unemployment after the financial crisis, and the same is thought to have happened here, where the job retention scheme is thought to have limited the level of employment that we might have seen had it not been implemented. So these retention schemes are essentially wage subsidies, which the government pays firms in proportion to the wages of its furloughed employees. And despite the retention schemes kind of taking the centre stage of fiscal policy, and there's a lot of discussion about them, fiscal policy tools in reality have been quite vast, including things like expanding existing benefits, such as universal credit. We've had temporary tax cuts and also additional spending in the economy, like grants to businesses that have been particularly hard hit. So really, the policy response has been quite vast and varied, and that kind of reflects how large and how unique, really, this crisis has been.
Thanks, Sophie. That's really interesting. So coming to you and Pat, so one of the key themes arising from this crisis has been the differential impact of the pandemic on different sectors and income levels. And we talked about this a bit at the Fraser before, but from the work that you did, what are your thoughts on how policy has responded to this?
So when you look at the impact of the crisis, as you have rightly pointed out, we find that some sectors were more impacted than others. So sectors which were most, which had been most impacted by the containment measures, such as the hospitality sector, as well as the food industry, experienced some of the slowest experienced the slowest turns in productivity. So when we compare those sectors against the uptake of some of the policy measures that were put in place, for example, the coronavirus job retention scheme, we find that the sectors that were most impacted were also the ones that took up the largest share of the job retention scheme, for example. So this shows that policy was well targeted to help those sectors that were most impacted by the economic effects of the pandemic. And then another thing to look at is also how timely the fiscal response was. So I think it's fair to say that the response was quite rapid, and also was provided at the time when the economy was experiencing a slowdown. And as it still is, for example, I've seen the job retention scheme being extended over and over based on how the economy is performing, which is a very important aspect of effective fiscal policy, ensuring that policy is implemented at the time when it's most needed and when it's going to achieve the outcomes that are required, as well as ensuring that it's targeted at the sectors of the economy that need help the most, as well as where it's going to achieve the highest impact in terms of boosting back consumption and ensuring that growth gets back to and also productivity gets back to its normal path.
Thanks. So thinking about some of the harm that that the pandemic and the subsequent recession has had on the economy, of course, we're not just concerned about what's happened in the last year, there's also the potential for harm going off into the future. And we often as economists talk about these things as scarring effects. So coming to you, Sophie, how much of a policy concern are these effects?
Yeah, so these are scarring effects that you mentioned. They occur when reduced economic activity leads to long-term consequences for the economy. So when we would have expected the economy to maybe have recovered, the scarring effects are kind of what stopped it from getting to that stage. And one of the main ways in which we think about these scarring effects is in the labour market. So for example, the longer a person's unemployed, the more likely they are to lose their skills and find it harder to re-enter the labour force. And that might lead them to exit the labour force altogether. It's also likely to probably negatively affect the well-being of workers. As you can imagine, it can be quite discouraging having constant job rejections and not being able to work when that's what you want to do. For firms, on the other hand, it's slightly different. So when they have to let go of their workers due to reduced economic activity and reduced demand, it might mean when demand starts to pick up again, when things start to recover, they have to try and find workers that have that level of firm-specific knowledge and the skills that they're looking for. And this might lead to initial mismatch, which slows down recovery. So both this effect on workers losing skills and firms potentially losing workers with specific knowledge can affect how well the economy can recover from the shock. So the greater these effects are, the slower recovery will be. And that's why it's such an important policy concern. And it's partly out of this concern for scarring effects that programs such as the Job Retention Scheme have emerged. So the aim here is to try and ensure that firms are able to retain their workers so you don't have to go through what's quite a costly process of trying to find employees that fit their criteria. It's also beneficial for employees. Although they may lose some skills from being out of work for so long, especially considering how long the furlough has gone on for, at least they don't have to go through this costly and discouraging process of trying to find a new job when there's very few jobs out there. So to say furlough trying to tackle these scarring effects, we need to think about the people who are also not covered by furlough. So in particular, the young people are particularly affected. And that's because they're less likely to be furloughed in the first place and more likely to work in sectors that have been negatively affected from the pandemic, such as Mbatsil mentioned. And it's particularly kind of poignant, really, because disruptions to careers tend to have a greater effect when they happen early on. And that's because, as you can imagine, in your early 20s, this tends to be when you make more rapid career promotions. So when you're out of the labour market during this time, you're missing out on that wage and job progression that might have happened otherwise. And this like ultimately can limit and reduce the overall lifetime earnings of our younger workers. And it's particularly important, not just in our short-term recovery, but in our long-term recovery. If we think about it, our young workers are our future economy, really. So that's why it's such a policy concern. And the UK government has pursued policies such as the Kickstart programme. And these programmes have tried to boost young people's skills while they've been out of the labour market and try and mitigate these perhaps negative effects on their career progression. So yeah, scarring effects have been really important in policy during this pandemic. And it's likely that they'll continue to be quite important given how important they are for our recovery.
Thanks, Sophie. It's really interesting. So we've obviously, when you're thinking about policy, there's lots of things to balance in terms of making them effective. And there are trade-offs between some of those effects. So in fact, so what are some of those trade-offs that policymakers will have had to be thinking about, particularly with fiscal policy?
Yeah, so one of the criteria is used to measure effectiveness of fiscal policy is referred to as the three T's, which basically look at timeliness of the policy, how temporary the policy is ideally, and also how targeted the policy is. So when you're looking at timeliness, as I earlier mentioned, the focus of the policy ideally is that it should coincide with the slowdown and the downturn of the economy. The idea behind being that the response of the policy will be able to boost consumption and also to help businesses stay afloat, therefore maintain the productive rate of the economy. And also slow response could be detrimental to the economy, particularly, for example, if fiscal policy is implemented at a time when the economy is already in recovery, then basically government would be taking over what the private sector would have done in that space, and therefore it would crowd out private investment, which could have negative effects and also kind of reverse the recovery that was there in the first place. And when we're looking at targeted, the ideal outcome would be that policy is targeted at those who are most affected, and also it's targeted in sectors or in areas where it's going to lead to increased consumption, because at the end of the day, that's the underlying goal of expansionary fiscal policy, that productivity is increased in terms of slowdown. So you want to make sure that it's targeted at individuals and sectors and businesses which are going to produce those outcomes. But then it's also important to understand that understanding the effects, the economic effect or the impact, and also understanding which sectors have been most affected is something that will probably take time. And therefore, it's sort of like balancing between the two, making sure that you target correctly, but at the same time ensuring that you're doing it in a timely manner. And yet by focusing on targeting, it means you're taking time, and therefore that could have an impact also to what extent the policy response is targeted. And then looking at the 30, so I talked about the need for policy to be temporary. And that's because if policy is implemented for longer than needed, then that could lead to wastage of resources where they're not needed. So like we have seen, the largest tool used, for example, the reduction in taxes or government borrowing in order to support different sectors of the economy, that can lead to an increase in government debt. And therefore, taking on debt to stimulate an economy that is already in recovery and beyond the need can lead to a wastage of these resources and not actually achieving the outcome that they're intended to achieve. So as you can see, there's need for a balance, is kind of making sure that it's timely, targeted, and temporary, but achieving these goals is always not straightforward.
Absolutely. And that's a great segue into introducing our next guest. So Marie Sparage, Interim Director of the Fraser Valander Institute. Thank you for joining us. I wanted to pick up with you this question about, you know, how this fiscal expansion in particular is financed, and you know, what are the implications for government debt, and how worried should we be about that?
Yeah, I mean, the sums of money involved in the sorts of measures that you've been discussing on the podcast have been enormous, absolutely eye-watering sums. And, you know, the borrowing in the latest financial year is the highest that we've had in peacetime. And it has added, obviously, to the stock of debt, which wasn't insignificant prior to this crisis kicking off. I guess the good thing is that, you know, many countries around the world have had to do this, and I don't think anyone would question that it was the right thing to do. You know, we needed to add to the stock of debt right now to ensure that our, you know, viable businesses could survive perhaps through the pandemic, to get individuals and households through the crisis. But we will have to come back to this issue of this increasing debt pile and the size of it that it's got to now. I mean, you can see that obviously the UK government were quite clear in their budget earlier in March that, you know, it will have to be dealt with at some point. And whilst we're still, I suppose, in like an emergency situation almost with the extension of furlough into September and so on, you know, at some point we'll get back to more normal times. You know, so the OBR now think that we'll probably get back to pre-pandemic levels next summer, so summer 2022. We think it might be a little bit longer, and others think it will be longer still, like the Scottish Fiscal Commission. But at some point we will get back to the economy operating more normally. And after that, it may be that we'll have, you know, tax rises in order to help reduce the debt. But still, even over that period, you know, we're still going to be borrowing some money for day-to-day activities in the UK for the next few years and continuing to add to the debt that we have. Obviously, a lot of commentators and forecasters will hope that the economy can grow and we can inflate our way out a bit of that debt, so it starts to reduce as a proportion of national income or GDP. But the good thing is that debt servicing costs are very low right now. So, you know, in terms of what we're paying to service that debt, it's actually kind of lower than it has been, even though the debt pile has got bigger. So the concern really is how long will that last? That is a great unknown, to be honest. We've thought for a long time that interest rates will not stay as low as they are. For all of the predictions have been that at some point they'll start to go up, but it hasn't happened and there are many reasons for that, and there are many disputed reasons for that. So in summary, I suppose it is a concern. We do need to get spending down to more sustainable levels. How you do that exactly, and how much we can rely on the economy growing is quite a difficult thing to predict. And exactly how the economy is going to start to get back to more normal levels, you know, is a really difficult question to answer.
Yeah, and I think we're going to continue to be trying to look at these trade-offs that you're talking about, Pat. So in terms of when is the right time to take away some of the support, like how, yeah, temporary should it be? And there's already been a few missed starts, I think, in the last year in terms of trying to take support away too soon. So just taking a step back, I suppose, and coming to you, Mari, to sort of ask about, you know, we've seen an extraordinary year in terms of what's been going on and what the response has been, you know, economic policy decisions that just were unthinkable before the pandemic started. Do you think the pandemic has changed the way that we as a society and government thinks about economic policy?
It's a really good question to ask. As you say, I mean, some of the decisions that were getting made last March were jaw-dropping, you know. For people like you and me, Emma, who've been around the economic policy space for a long time, it did seem completely impossible that these sorts of decisions could be made and be made at such pace. The sorts of grants that were being given out to businesses, even the scale of that. And obviously the big one was the job retention scheme, which seemed like a real game changer. And it was kind of, it was unthinkable that the UK government would introduce such a thing. So, you know, it does make it seem more possible that, you know, a future UK government would be, you know, more inclined to intervene in the private sector than maybe we thought they were. You know, maybe this means in the future there's a possibility of things like kind of unemployment schemes or unemployment insurance, which are more related to what your salary was before, rather than just sort of particular sort of standard levels of support. You know, and these exist in other countries, you know, and have been trialled in other countries. But it was a complete game changer for the sort of intervention from the state. I think the signs are obviously that the government are looking to obviously roll back on those when the time is right. But as you say, there have been some misstarts in terms of thinking about when these could be actually removed without causing huge damage to the economy. But yeah, overall, I think it does potentially give some space for some more sort of imaginative future interventions in the economy that the government might look to do potentially in the future. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens.
Yeah, and I think we've seen similar kind of new ideas coming up on the monetary policy side as well, and some of those tools in terms of, you know, people have been floating the idea of negative interest rates in the future. So, you know, that could still be something which comes onto the scene that, you know, we would never have expected really to see before.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we know that, you know, there's some members of the MPC who are in favour potentially of trying something like negative interest rates. You know, the evidence is a bit mixed and, you know, we don't know exactly how the financial system in the UK, crucially, would kind of respond to that. And, you know, the last thing obviously that the government wants is to make banks less likely to lend than they are at the moment. So, but it's really interesting to see whether the Bank of England do decide to go down that more unconventional route and what the impacts might be on the economy.
Well, thank you to all our guests today, to Patso, Sophie and Mary. You can find the report on our website alongside our latest commentary, where you can find lots more information about what's going on in the economy at the moment and some of the prospects for the future, including those forecasts that Mary mentioned. But I'd like to say again, thank you to the guests, and we hope to see you next time on our next podcast.